I felt both weak-kneed and light-headed, relieved that she wasn't dead, relieved that the professor hadn't done it, and especially relieved that I wouldn't have to try explaining this to Detective Lippincott, how I had innocently happened upon my second dead body in a single semester. I didn't know exactly what had happened, but it seemed clear that the only violence perpetrated had been done by the coffee table. It was probably safe to leave her. I thought about waking her to make sure she wasn't more injured than she looked. Drooling like that was perhaps a sign of a concussion, but the way she was lying and the small height she had fallen from suggested that a relatively harmless bump was more likely. Some children are also known to be heavy droolers all the way up through adolescence. Now I had only to decide whether to lift her back onto the couch or cover her with the blanket where she lay. I was nervous about frightening her if she should suddenly wake in the arms of a perfect stranger, at the very same time she was discovering that her eye was swollen and crusted shut. However, the fact she hadn't stirred from the tripod crash convinced me to take the chance and lift her back onto the couch. She stirred briefly, but not enough to achieve full wakefulness. I was about to cover her with her blanket when I heard the professor's snores suddenly cease, replaced by a hacking cough. I rushed in to make sure he was all right. His coughing spell was short-lived, and his snores again commenced, this time robust and sonorous and even comical, a cross between a honking goose and a braying donkey. But at least they were regular and even. I returned to the living room to check on the girl and discovered she had awakened enough to cover herself with her blanket and was back asleep. Everything appeared settled now in both rooms. I made sure the coffee table was out of range, and then, leaving the light on in the kitchen, I let myself out. Back at my dorm, Larry Magnolia spotted me as soon as I stepped off the elevator. He called down to me, Hey, arsebucket, where have you been? Magnolia's style as a floor counselor operated similarly to a gulag prison guard. His room was centrally located, opposite the bathroom door and catty-corner to both the lounge and the shower room. Perfect location for allowing him to keep track of comings and goings. He often carried it a step further by placing his chair out in the hall and leaning back against the wall with his smartphone on his lap. Rumor had it that he had a special penchant for taking up this post whenever a member of the opposite sex was using the shower room. He also kept a pocket watch on his person. He was checking it now as he was walking down to me. 11 minutes past your curfew, Robinson. Violation. I'm reporting it. I was meeting with my faculty advisor. It ran late. Oh, yeah, sure, your faculty advisor. It was. Prove it. Ask him. He started to say something, but changed course. I don't have to ask him. All I have to do is report to the dean that you came home past your curfew, and then you can prove it. Fine, Larry. Just make sure you report what I said I was doing. He followed me the rest of the way to my room. Your girlfriend was here. Did you know that? But she got tired of waiting around and left. Girlfriend? You're going to have to be a lot more specific. I said it just to goad him. The sister of the one you strangled, he answered. You know, Larry, I never did hear what your alibi was for that night. Ignoring me, he said. Anyway, I kept her company. She's got a great bod on her. I think she's got the hots for me. I'm sure she does, Larry. I'm sure all women do. She probably just had to get away because she couldn't control herself a minute longer. Yeah, something like that. I do have that effect on women, I said.
similar to a laxative?
Yeah, well, I mentioned to her that when she gets tired of fooling around with little boys, she should look me up and find out what a real man is like.
I'm sure she will, Larry. I'm sure she can't wait.
I close the door.